It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours. Like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more. Made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, parachutes ready.
Boy, the things I go through to get auto loan rates as low as 1.04% APR for 36 months on new vehicles with PenFed.
You are aware that you don't have to be a military member to save hundreds on your auto loan, aren't you? Anyone can join PenFed.
As someone terrified of heights, I probably should have looked into that.
Probably.
Drop me off at the shore.
PenFed Credit Union. Visit PenFed.org/autos or call 1-800-247-5626. Advertised rates available through the PenFed Car Buying Service. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I'm an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York, on the other line in Los Angeles, is the red foo to my sky blue, Keith Caulfield. How's it going, Keith?
I'm good. I'm not like the Lauren Bennett to your...
Goon rock?
For once, I actually got the reference and was able to come back, sort of.
Boom. Well, you know, I almost went NBA Finals. I almost said, like, Steph Curry to my LeBron James, but decided to go LMFAO. You 2011.
Steffi Graf to your Serena Williams.
Yeah. Hey, there you go. Serena in the news as
French
well.
French Open. You know what's happening this week. Yeah. Said, look at me with the sport talk, the talking of the sports.
Well, Keith, as always, welcome to the Pop Shop Podcast. We have a very special show today.
And
on
for
the
once,
Pop
we're not
Podcast.
Lying. It is actually truly a special, different kind of show.
It really is. We're going to put the charts aside for a second. Actually, we'll be talking about the charts, but not this week's Hot 100 or Billboard 200. We will return to that next week, but this week is another edition of Ask the Pop Shop. That's right. We had a bunch of Twitter followers give us questions based on pop music and the charts. Some for Keith, some for me, some for both of us. And we are anxious to answer as many questions as possible. Also, later in the show, we have an interview with the one and only Jason Derulo. That's right, Jason Derulo stopped by to talk about his new album, Everything Is Four, which came out earlier this month, as well as his hit song, Want to Want Me, and upcoming tour dates. Keith, it's going to be a great show. Before we get started, as always, a couple housekeeping and one actual housekeeping note to add from now on. So, if you like the Pop Shop Podcast and you are not subscribed to us on iTunes already, please do so. That way you never ever miss an episode. Also, give us a rating or review on iTunes if you have a free second. We always appreciate that. And hit us up on Twitter. He is at Keith_Caulfield. I am at Jason Lipschutz. And one other note, we now have an easy way to get to Billboard's podcast home in iTunes. If you type in the URL, itunes.com/billboardpodcasts. That's right, podcasts plural. itunes.com/billboardpodcasts. That sends you to the Billboard podcast page in iTunes. It has all four Billboard podcasts: Pop Shop Podcast, The Juice, Must Hear Music, and The Alt and Our Stars.
Are you part of all four of these podcasts? Are you just like podcast dude?
No, I'm only part of two of these four.
Great.
So I'm half podcast dude. I'm usually on the Must Hear Music podcast. That is my colleague Joe Lynch's show. Always happy to join that. That is a music discovery show where we talk about the hot new music. Erica Ramirez, our hip-hop editor, is dropping hip-hop and R&B knowledge every week on The Juice. And then our rock correspondent, Chris Payne, is up and coming with The Alt and Our Stars. Check all of them out on iTunes. They're all great shows. And subscribe to all of them. So itunes.com/billboardpodcasts. Keith, are you ready to rock and roll?
Yes.
All right, man. Ask the Pop Shop. Like I said, these are real questions from real Twitter users. Thank you to all.
As opposed to the fake ones that we normally provide you.
No, yeah, that is true. Sometimes I feel like when we did the first Ask the Pop Shop, we were the podcast was in its infancy, and we had like, I mean, we got most fan questions, but we also had like one or two like friend questions. Like, hey, yeah, we need some more questions.
You're kind of you're pulling the curtain away, and I'm saying,
hey, this was like a year and a half ago. So I we've come a long way. We've gotten a lot of questions. Always love doing Ask the Pop Shop. So thanks to those who sent in questions. We're going to try to get to as many as possible. So let's do it, man. The first one is from at ILoveRE7.
I wonder who this person likes. Could be Ariana Grande.
It could be Ariana Grande. I will say, as I always do during Ask the Pop Shop time, if I mispronounce anyone's names or anyone's Twitter handle, I apologize. My last name is Lipschutz. I get mispronunciations all the time.
Just remember, Lipschutz.
LMFAO. Everything goes back to LMFAO. I think we actually have an LMFAO question in here. So, at ILoveRE7 wants to know, if a main artist has multiple hits, but most are collabs, does that take away from that artist's success? And Keith, I think we should both weigh in on this. What do you think?
I mean, we hear that more and more, you know, certainly in the past, like, you know, decade or so, where it's become commonplace for collaborations and features and duets and withs and blah, blah, blah. Like, I mean, basically ever since, you know, kind of like the mid-90s when hip-hop really took off in the charts and we had folks like Diddy bringing on a bunch of people, you know, Diddy featuring the Notorious B.I.G. and Mace and 112 and now it's just become kind of commonplace, especially, you know, if you want a guest rapper on your song, it'll be, you know, Madonna featuring Nicki Minaj. So I think depending on how you view it, it could diminish sort of the chart legacy, I suppose, but it's just a different time and place. And I think the only time that it really comes into play in terms of sort of the success of someone, because you'll forever be able to say that you were part of a top 40, top 10, number one song if your name was on the artist billing, you know? 112 will always be part of I'll Be Missing You with Puff Daddy and Faith Evans because they were the featured act. They sang on it and they were credited. Yeah. So they will forever have a number one hit. I think the only time it gets a little bit murky is when we talk about something like, you know, Lil Wayne has like 5 billion entries on the Hot 100 chart. When like, you know, half of those are things that he was featured on where he just does like 15 seconds of a rap. And, you know, when you have to stack him next to someone like Elvis Presley, where all of his singles were as a lead artist and he was the only artist on the track, or someone like Aretha Franklin, where all of her songs, I think, were just her. Well, except for like the George Michael duet, you know, a couple songs here and there.
Yeah.
It's you have to sort of just keep that in mind when you discuss the many acts that are now featured on so many other songs.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And, you know, this question is asking about artist success. You took it from a chart success standpoint. From a pop success standpoint, I agree with you that I think it's a case-by-case basis. I feel like more and more you see artists using collaborations to you know, prop themselves up and find a hit that really sticks with people.
Ooh, and who's propping themselves up and trying to find a hit, Jason?
Sorry?
I said, who's propping themselves up and trying to find a hit? Come on, spill the names.
No, I'm speaking generally. I'm actually not thinking of anybody.
I know. I was just trying to like get you to say something negative, and you aren't going there.
Well, what I was going to say is, if you look, I think that if you establish your voice and your type of artistry in a way that's meaningful, it doesn't really matter if it's through a collaboration or through a solo track. I mean, if you look at, you know, going back to this person's ILoveRE7 favorite artist. Ariana Grande's first handful of singles, a lot of her songs were all collaborations. If you think of Problem with Iggy Azalea, you had The Way with Mac Miller, you had a bunch of multiple songs with Big Sean, Break Free from
Bang Zed, Bang with Jessie J and Nicki Minaj.
Yeah, so, but the thing is, you can so clearly identify her voice and the type of artist she is that it doesn't really matter that those weren't solo tracks. I don't think it takes away from an artist's success if it's done in the right way. I guess that's my answer.
Yeah, there's no clean cut answer for this one.
Keith.
Yep.
At SIK333, a longtime listener, I believe that's Stuart Klein. Thanks, Stuart. Wants to know, what song has the most separate chart runs? And he mentions "Dear Future Husband" by Meghan Trainor, currently on its fifth. I feel like this might be a little difficult to answer. I'll kick it to you.
Unfortunately, and a number of these questions, I consulted Gary Trust, who is the other co-director of charts at Billboard, and he also manages the Billboard Hot 100 chart. I consulted with him on this one, and he says, well, unfortunately, we don't really have a good answer for this one. It's a little too difficult to research. I don't know what song has the most separate chart runs. And, you know, certainly lately with how the chart works, you know, a song can pop on and off the chart, you know, first as an album cut or first as just, you know, when the album comes out, you know, because there's a sudden surge of streams and then it goes away and then it comes back as an album cut and then comes back as, you know, when someone performs it on TV and then it goes away and then finally it's worked as an official single and then it charts. So nowadays it's a lot harder because a lot of songs can have multiple chart runs. It's not like in the olden days where, you know, like Chubby Checker's The Twist, like, has one chart run and then it goes to number one and then it leaves the chart. And then like a year later, it comes back again for another run at number one. Like, that's a really unique, separate chart run. Meghan Trainor's Dear Future Husband is kind of different, like just leaving the chart for 2 weeks, then coming back, like, well, a little bit different. So no, the answer is I don't have the answer. I wish I did, but I don't.
Well, it's the same thing if you look at Bad Blood by Taylor Swift. When 1989 came out, that snuck onto the Hot 100 in the lower reaches, and now that it's a single with the big music video, it's back in the top 10.
Yep.
So, Keith, let's move on to at Austin A. Graham. Do you think Adele taking so long to release her next album is going to hurt or help her? When do you think it will come out? So I'll take this one, Keith. Okay. I don't think. Did you say damn it?
No, I said okay.
Oh, I thought you said damn it. Like you wanted to end, and you can weigh in as well. I just wanted to say I don't think it's going to hurt her, just because there's still such a hunger for Adele music. At least that's the perception I get, and it just seems like 21 was such a huge deal that even if this comes out in the next year or two or three, it's still going to be a big deal when she does come back. I mean, if you look at an artist like Justin Timberlake, who had such a monumental success with 2006's Future Sex Love Sounds, took his time to come back, waited till 2013 with his third album, and now I mean he put it up in the right way. He stoked anticipation. I think Adele's going to do that as well. When do you think it will come out? I have a feeling we're not too far away, and I'm not basing that on anything, but I feel like we haven't heard word in a while. I feel like she's been finishing things up. I would not be shocked if it's fourth quarter of this year. I wouldn't bet my life on it, but I wouldn't be shocked either. What do you think, Keith?
Well, about when it's coming, well, that's anyone's guess.
Yeah, that is anyone's guess.
I think we've seen a lot of examples of an artist that will go away for a good long time. You know, Sade is a great example. Maxwell goes away.
I actually thought about Sade.
D'Angelo went away for a while. Don Henley has his first album coming out, his first solo studio album this year since, I think, 2000. So
that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I know, right? So, I mean, he's worked on Eagle stuff since then, but still, it's not quite the same thing. I think, you know, certain artists just take a little bit longer. I don't think it's like a hurt or help thing. I think the only time that sort of plays into it is if it's been a long time for something to come out, and then once it does come out, it doesn't live up to the incredible expectations that have been projected onto it, like Guns N' Roses' Chinese Democracy, or when... You know, like, let's pretend like Dr. Dre decided to drop Detox. You know, it's that sort of thing where there's been so much hype and drama behind something. Once it does come out, if it doesn't live up to it, and there's no way it could possibly could, then, you know, it's so I think I don't think that's going to happen with Adele, though, because she's put out two really solid albums that have been embraced by people. And I think she knows herself. She's like, look, I'm not going to make this cruddy. So I think she's doing it the right way.
Here's the thing. And I think it depends on what kind of artist it is. And if it's a and maybe I think let me back up a little bit. I think there's a difference between an artist who people are really invested in as an artist themselves, as they want to buy their album and want to get that full experience, versus an artist who comes back after a while after scoring a bunch of hit singles. The one I'm thinking of specifically is Nelly Furtado, who had a bunch of hit singles in 2006 with her album Loose, and they were great songs. I love Man Eater and Promiscuous and Say It Right, but it wasn't like she wasn't really perceived as an artist where you need to buy the whole album. It was those tracks that were helmed by Timbaland that did so well for her. So when she finally came back years later, there just wasn't that kind of hunger for more Nelly Furtado music. And like you said, it didn't live up to expectations with Hoops, parentheses, The Bigger the Better. Do you remember that track?
No.
No? Aw.
So exactly. I wasn't really looking for Nelly Furtado either, unfortunately.
Yeah. So But circling back to Adele, I think Adele is that kind of artist where it's like, people didn't just like Set Fire to the Rain or Rolling in the Deep. They liked that entire album.
They like
Adele as an artist. Yeah, exactly. So I think she will be totally fine when she comes back. Hopefully soon. Come back, Adele. So
come back to the podcast. We'd love you to have on the show.
Yeah,
why not?
Let's go.
Come on.
All right, man. We got to move on. So, Keith, another question for you. And a little bit of a confusing question, but I wanted to ask it anyway. At Daddy Mahardika... again, apologies for any mispronunciations, wants to know, is there any chance Uptown Funk will be the song of the decade beating Party Rock Anthem? So we got to, you know, we got to mention LMFAO, as always. So I don't know if Party Rock Anthem is necessarily the song of the decade. I assume it's not. But in terms of Uptown Funk, like, do you see this being like a, when all is said and done, obviously we have like half a decade still to go, but... What do you think? Do you think this is will be in like the top 10 of the 2010s?
I like it because they say, is there any chance? Of course there's a chance. There's always a chance for anything to happen. There's a chance. But I don't know. I'm not going to forecast any much more than that. That's a really lame answer. But, you know, I mean, it's a huge number one hit. Anything is possible. And the thing has been in the top five at least last week. We don't have the new Hot 100 yet because we're recording this on Tuesday. The song had been in the top five for, I don't know, I think it's the past 4 months or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
So anything is possible.
Anything is possible. It's a tease to 2020 when we release our end of decade charts. Tune in 4 years.
Right. I think it'd be the end of 2019.
End of 2019.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
Tune in 4.5 years. So at British Music Addict... wants to know, hello to the UK if they're listening, do you think if Tidal focused the launch of on user experience rather than artist benefit, it would be doing better? So we've mentioned Tidal a little bit on this show, but we haven't really talked about it too much. I think that there is at least starting to be a little shift in perception where the emphasis is on user experience. I know that a lot of people are still unhappy with Tidal, but it seems like they've been ramping up their user-friendly exclusive content. Maybe that's just me. Maybe that's what I'm seeing. But if you look at the... you know, the Nicki Minaj Beyonce video Feeling Myself, that was only on Tidal. The Summer Jam live stream was only on Tidal. The Jay-Z B-Sides concert was only available to Tidal users. So I think they're trying to change that. Maybe this question is hinting that at the beginning it was more about, hey, artist, this is your new home, and regular music consumers weren't into that. But I think it's trying to shift a little bit, and I think rather successfully. I've heard some people who are getting on board with Tidal. What do you think, Keith?
To be perfectly honest, I'm not a Tidal user. not because I don't enjoy it. It's just I haven't really gotten into it very much.
Okay. I mean, it's still very new. It's only been like 2.5 months, I think.
Right, and most people aren't using it. So
yeah,
most people, I mean, I would love to see a statistic on how many people actually use any streaming services. Because we talk about Spotify and all these things before, all these other things all of the time, and I think most people consider a streaming service as YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
And now maybe the new iTunes, Apple service, who knows? Well, I think initially there was a lot of backlash just because it's like, hey, we're these multimillionaires and we're going to finally do artists right. It's like, well, I guess. And I think there was just this sort of easy backlash against that.
I like your multimillionaire voice, by the way.
Those
very
fat,
sultry.
Those fat cats in Washington. sitting on piles of money at Jay-Z's Rockefeller. Rock Nation. Rockefeller. Rock Nation. Anyway, I'm doing the voices again, Jason. They're coming back into my head.
I love it.
They're falling out. Yeah, I think in the beginning there was some backlash, but I think now they're probably, the fruits of those artists' investments in it. You know, I have the feeling that Madonna's new video, Bitch on Madonna, which is purportedly supposed to have a bunch of guests in it, will probably be on Tidal exclusively. Yeah. So they're leveraging that. And, you know, they were trying to get across the idea of how, the audio quality is, you know, much more significant, you know, it's significantly different and more pure on Tidal than other streaming services. So I think it's a work in progress. I think it's interesting right now we're at this weird time where you have Spotify going up against Tidal, going up against the Apple product, and, you know, now it's all about streams. I'm like, is anyone ever really going to buy music again? Have they all just like abandoned the idea of selling a download, or is that just like basically Taylor Swift at this point? Like, nope. Only way you can get my music is if you buy it.
Well, what's funny is we also have another Ask the Pop Shop question from @AdamBexton, who says, I've always wondered your takes on streaming. Is it saving the industry or just a fad? And you kind of gave yours, I guess, right then.
Well, I mean... You know, offering like someone like, you know, you pay $20 a month for, you know, access to music. And, you know, I mean, the hope is that you'll pay this monthly installment every month so that at the end of the year, 12 times TK, like $10 a month, oh, it's $120 that I've paid. So that hopefully, you know, maybe that might be more money than you would have spent on music if you purchased it. You know, just to have access to music in the world. Like, if we can get everyone just to pay for music, the access to music, much in the same way people just pay to have TV, or they pay to have HBO, or they pay to have ESPN, or whatever it is. Yeah. You know, if we can just get people to get used to the concept of paying for this, you know, maybe that will help us, as opposed to just stealing music or listening to it for free or whatever. And that's what they're trying to do. I don't think it's a fad. I think they're trying to find a way to, and I think it's a smart thing, to shift people into the subscription idea where if I just pay a fee and I just sort of get used to the idea of not really thinking about, like, no, it's just $10 a month and I'm totally down with paying $10 a month if I can listen to everything that is in the iTunes store. I have no idea what the deal is, but I'm like, that's just an example. I'm like, that's cool. And if I can always take that with me and always have it on demand anywhere that I'm at, that I have my iTunes, you know, program, that's pretty awesome. But you just have to get people used to that idea. And I think there's a whole chunk of people who are used to the idea of everything is free on YouTube. Why am I going to give you money? So
yeah,
that's the problem right now.
Yeah, I think I've always kind of thought of this era of streaming as like phase one, which is that here's the introduction of streaming, and again, streaming, Spotify and even YouTube, it's less than 10 years old, really, this concept of consuming music in this way. iTunes is older than 10 years old, but just the streaming itself. And I think that this is phase one in the sense that it's not perfect. And I think that over the next few years, and this is the reason why you see something like Apple Music and why you see something like Tidal, is because there are new services that are meant to perfect the streaming experience where, you know, Tidal is obviously focused on artist rights, and Apple Music is trying to, it's the newest, obviously, it's trying to get the best of both worlds. I just think that it'll be interesting to see what that phase two is. And I don't know what phase two is, but I have a feeling that it's going to try to thread the needle and get people to have as much music as they want for a price everyone deems reasonable and a price that artists can be happy with. I think we're not there yet, but I think we're hopefully headed there and hopefully soon. Yeah. But yeah, there you go. There's the hot take on streaming that Pop Shop Podcast fans have been thirsting for. Uh-huh. So Keith.
Yeah.
We only have time for a few more. Let's try to rocket through them. At Anthony Grayson wants to know, why do you think age is such a limiting factor in today's musical climate? So this is a pretty broad question, but I'll try to narrow the focus for at Anthony Grayson. You see a lot of veteran artists really struggling in terms of selling albums and scoring hits. In the past year and a half, you have someone like Mariah Carey, someone like your beloved Madonna, someone like Jennifer Lopez. These huge superstar divas that are just struggling while, you know, you have younger artists like, you know, the new artists like Ariana Grande and 5 Seconds of Summer and Fifth Harmony.
They're struggling in a very specific aspect of their career.
Yes.
Meaning they're not getting play on the radio and not having like huge individual like single sales. Mariah is doing probably just fine at her Caesars Coliseum show.
Yeah.
J-Lo is making bajillions of dollars as a spokesperson, as a judge on American Idol, as an author. She's still in movies. Like, she's still a megastar. Madonna's, you know, her arena tour will probably do just fine. So I think, you know, in a specific metric of top 40 radio, or, you know, a lot of radio airplay and a lot of like streams, that kind of thing, it's a young person demographic. You know, radio programmers are programming their stations to appeal to people that are like in the age range of like, you know, 12 to 34 or something. You know, they have very specific demographics that they're going for with, you know, because they need to get advertisers to want those people to listen to the radio because they're trying to, it's an ad supported thing. Like, you know, the reason why you hear certain ads on the radio is because those advertisers want a certain demographic of listener to be hearing those ads. So there's a reason why Ariana Grande is played so much on Top 40 Radio, because Ariana Grande brings in a specific kind of listener that radio programmer and the sales and the advertisements you hear want to have listen to that radio station. That hopefully makes sense. So Madonna and J-Lo and Mariah and Bruce Springsteen and Bob Dylan and Barbra Streisand all bring in a much older demographic, which is not what these radio stations want. They don't want a bunch of, like, you know, 30 plus people or 40 or 50 listening to those radio stations, which in a way doesn't make a whole lot of sense because those are the ones that have more money in theory to spend, but that's just the way it is for those particular radio stations. So conversely, and then I'll shut up, look at the Rolling Stones. Like, they haven't had a hit on top 40 radio probably since like 1989, 1990. However, they're playing stadiums across America this year.
Yeah.
And they're selling like 50,000 seats for like hundreds and hundreds of dollars a ticket. Oh, they're doing just fine. So yeah. I think it depends on how you're looking at this particular ageism question and what specific part of the music world you're looking at.
Totally agree. I mean, everyone's having success. It's just in a different way, in maybe a less visible way if someone is just paying attention to YouTube and radio and whatnot.
Also, and it is worth saying that all these old people, quote-unquote old people that I've mentioned, all started out as like top 40 people. They all started out as younger people. So the rub here is that you can't really start out as an older person. It's a young man's game, this pop music thing, unfortunately. Now, you can start out and, you know, you might have that sort of midlife blossom like that Tina Turner had at 45, you know, 30 years ago when she came back with Private Dancer. You know, maybe you could be in your 30s as the Pet Shop Boys were when they had their first number one back in like 86. The chance of that happening, though, now as things get more younger and more streamier is a little bit difficult. Doesn't mean it can't happen. Yeah. But it is, you know, pop music is sort of a young man's game. But I think the great thing is about social networks and streams and YouTube and all this other stuff is that we're finding so many other ways to develop and nurture talent, no matter what age you are or what demographic you appeal to. There's a little something for everyone now.
Yeah, and I totally agree, and that's why I'm going to drop my debut single very soon.
Dude, you and we should record a single and market it through the Pop Shop, and we should make it a very specific kind of like genre single because, you know, I work in charts, and I know how much you have to sell to get onto some of these charts. So I think we can make it happen, and it'd be like legit sales. But if we made like a reggae track...
Oh man!
Like you wouldn't have to sell that much to get onto some of our reggae charts. We could totally.
That would be so cool.
Like we're like the worst possible nightmare for reggae music, but we could like make it happen.
For those listening, if you want to suggest a title for Keith and my debut reggae single, please hit us up.
Maybe a dance track that might be easier, an EDM track because it's like closer to home for us. But we can't just do something generic like pop. It's too hard to compete with pop stuff. They sell too well.
Let us know what the Pop Shop Podcast debut single should be called. All right, Keith, let's do two more, and we'll make these very quick because we got to get to Jason Derulo. So at Rich Baxter wants to know, and this is a very random question that I love, what would it take for Ashley Simpson to come back with a decent-sized hit?
I would like her stepmother to be on the track with her.
Yeah, Diana Ross, come on.
Come on,
let's
Diana.
Let's go.
we should tweet to Diana because she's now on Twitter. You know, she joined Twitter recently. We should tweet to Ms. Ross and say, you know, have you considered a collaboration with Ashley and your son Evan, perhaps?
Yeah, I would love it. I listen. Aside from her kind of shaky third album, Ashley Simpson, super underrated pop rock artist from the mid-2000s, and I would love for her to come back. If she kind of just decided to hit up Max Martin and Shellback and do this thing again for real, I don't know if it would be that successful just because it's been such a long time, but I think there would be an audience for it. Why not? Let's go. Let's do it. That's my answer, is I think that she needs the right producers. She needs to find the right sound.
Dude, if I had the right producers and the right sound, I could have a hit.
Well, yeah.
I mean, if Max Martin's available, I'm sure that he could probably craft...
For our reggae debut single.
Well, no. I mean, if Max Martin like was available, it's like, sure, Keith, we can do a charity single. Like, wouldn't it be fun? Like, here, it's a Pop Shop project. Max Martin creates a single for Keith and Jason. Oh, my God. Can you imagine? He could make us sing well. Like, our voices would sound amazing, I think. All it would take is a little bit of production.
Well, okay, on that note, we have to get to our last Twitter question.
Oh.
No, I agree. Let's do it, man. Why are we not doing this right now? Let's do it right after the podcast. We'll debut it on the new podcast, Become Stars, and leave this Billboard game behind. No, that would be too hard, though. What if we become famous and we don't have time to
do
the podcast?
There is precedent. A former Billboard staffer went on to... Actually, there's kind of a couple precedents. Jimmy Buffett used to write for Billboard back in the 70s before he became big and famous. Cara DiAguardi used to be like the assistant to our like publisher or something a million years ago before she became a hit songwriter and later a judge on American Idol. And here's a fun example, and then I'll shut up. Tommy Page, who of course hit number one back in 1990 with I'll Be Where Everything, later became our publisher a couple years ago, and now he has since left Billboard and gone on to something else. But that's a different kind of workaround. He started as an artist and then came to Billboard as an executive.
Brief history of pop artists who worked at Billboard. I love it. So last one, man. Okay. So at Simon Vierzig?
Let's not do that one, actually.
Let's not do that one?
Because I have the answer, but I printed it out, but the far right-hand side of the page where the numbers are at are not on it, and I don't actually have the answer to this question.
All right,
it's on my computer, not on the piece of paper.
We'll edit this out. Okay, last question, Keith. Let's do at I'm Here to Scream, which is easily my favorite Twitter handle that we've gotten a question from. And I'm this one is an interesting question that I want to kick to you. What advantage does an artist have in streaming an album for free before release? And this is something we see a lot. We're seeing it actually this week. Adam Lambert is streaming his new album, The Original High, on Amazon. I believe Rain Weaver is streaming her debut album on iTunes Music. Basically, what happens is the week before release, you see a lot of albums streaming for free on different platforms. So, Keith, let me ask you, and I'll weigh in after you. What is the advantage of this?
The idea is that if you are streaming it, say, through, you know, if it's on the front page of iTunes and it's available to stream a week before the album comes out, you will turn those streams into pre-orders. And there has been, anecdotal evidence that I've, because I've asked labels, I'm like, all right, why are you guys doing this? It's like, you're just giving it away. I'm like, you actually see pre-orders go up that week. Yeah. I think depending on where you're streaming it and how it's set up, it could be a combination of factors. It could be a particular service is paying for the exclusive streaming advance of that album, like perhaps Adam Lambert's making some coin out of this from Amazon directly to give them the exclusive 1 week stream of the album. And then you're going to turn around and hopefully generate further sales and pre-orders out of it. So I think that's what mostly is happening here. You're trying to generate sales ultimately with these pre-streams or the pre-release streams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. And, you talk about pre-orders. I just think it's more exposure when it's done in the right way. I think that when you have that kind of – you see an artist like I said, Rin Weaver, Pop Shop podcast friend Rin Weaver, streaming her album a week ahead of time for free on iTunes Radio, I believe. iTunes Music, iTunes Radio.
I don't know what it's called. I should know that.
But if you go to the iTunes store, I mean, there's a big button where you can see, hey, listen to the Rin Weaver album right now for free. People are going to check that out, and if they like it, they might pre-order it. So I think it's just about exposure and trying to get people to know, hey, listen to this whole thing. If you like it, you can buy it in a week. So I hear you, man. It's not that surprising that it's successful. It's a weird thing. For sure. Like, in terms of the concept of it, like, oh, we're going to give this away for free for a week, but then after the week you have to buy it, but you're going to want to buy it after you have it for free. Like, that's a strange concept.
Well, yeah, but you're giving away a stream. You're not giving away a download.
Exactly. Yeah. But banking on enough people wanting that download after hearing it via streaming – it's interesting, and I think it works.
It's the same, it's the same concept in a way as how iTunes used to only offer 30 seconds of a sample of a song, and then they bumped it up to 45 seconds. Then they bumped it up to a minute 30.
Yeah,
and the fear is that, well, you're hearing so much of the song, maybe you won't want to buy it. It's like, yeah, but now you're hearing more of the song. Maybe you'll just go ahead and buy the whole thing. And I think they're probably thinking like, okay, now you can stream the whole thing. Maybe you'll still want to buy it. Like, I don't know. I mean, now with the whole streaming, like everything you can stream, it's like, why would you ever buy an album? As we go back to that question again, why would you ever just buy a download anymore?
Anyway, yeah.
Sorry.
Well, there you go, man. That's going to put a bow on Ask the Pop Shop.
Thank you, everyone.
Again. Thank you guys so much for sending in questions. Sorry if we did not get to it. If you do have any further questions or follow-up questions, like I said, hit us up on Twitter. He is at Keith_Caulfield. I am at Jason Lipschutz. All right, man. We got to get to another Jason. This is Jason Derulo. He stopped by the Billboard Studios to talk about his new album, Everything Is Four, which features the top 10 hit Want to Want Me, as well as his career as a pop performer, overcoming his injury from a few years ago and going back on tour at the top of 2016. Jason was great. Here he is on the Pop Shop Podcast. Jason Derulo, thanks for stopping by Billboard. Congrats on Everything Is Four.
Oh, thanks, brother. Appreciate that, man.
Album number four, how different does this feel than the other three before it?
Man, I feel like I get more and more excited each time. You would think that in the beginning you'll be, the most excited. But I feel like, it just gets more exciting, and the feeling is more prevalent. I don't know.
Yeah. It seems like you've added so much to your repertoire on this album. Like, do you feel like that as well?
I feel like, yeah, time has definitely been good, man, in terms of me growing as a man and as an artist. Definitely added a bunch to the repertoire, and kept a lot of the old things from the repertoire, and you just continue to expand.
Yeah, it's so funny because there's this run on the album where it's like four or five different kinds of songs, like completely different kinds of songs. Mm-hmm. One's with Meghan Trainor, you have Keith Urban and Stevie on a track, then you have a tropical track with J-Lo. Like,
just sounds crazy. Just hearing it back to.
Yeah, see, you're just like, oh yeah, Stevie Wonder and Keith Urban. Exactly. And then next track's J-Lo. Yeah. Was this kind of like a bucket list project where you were like, I've always wanted to work with some of these people?
It's definitely a bucket list project, man. I mean, you know, J-Lo was, you know, something that I've always watched and admired, man. And Stevie, you know, was one of my heroes, man. So, you know, to have those caliber artists on my album is, you know, it's a dream for anybody, I think. But yeah, it was a lot of fun creating the album because everything was always so experimental and fun, and I wasn't really putting any pressures on myself. And it was just about the art, it was just about the music, it was just about the reality, making that reality come to life on wax.
What was that feeling like when you hear, I mean, you're obviously a big Stevie fan, what was that like to hear that moment where the song's done and you hear a song featuring Stevie Wonder? Like, was that surreal?
I think the moment I was in the studio and I watched Stevie walk to his booth on his own, you know, with nobody's help. And the moment he started to play the melody, you know, that was created by me, you know, that moment right there is a crazy one. You know what I'm saying? Somebody that you grew up watching, somebody that you used to study, yeah. You know, is being a part of, you know, something that you created, I think is pretty crazy, man. And I think it's a dream come true, and definitely a notch off the bucket list. Turning pretty face to girls trying to press
each other. Undercover freaks who ain't none but trouble. It's just, you're known for touring. You've toured internationally countless times. People are waiting for to hear these songs live and experience them live. Is that coming in the next couple months?
So tour starts at the top of the year. Couldn't be more excited about tour because I get to perform these songs and bring these songs to life. You know, it's one thing to create the song and be able to turn up to them, but to actually make the song visual is a whole nother thing. Yeah. And just like creating a music video, I create concepts for my tour so that each and every song has a story, and you can kind of see the story as, you know, you're watching the choreography and watching the different lighting. Because I grew up in theater, musical theater, you know what I'm saying? So tour is going to be a spectacle. So I couldn't be more excited.
Now, are you like, I know you're a couple of years removed from your accident now, and mm-hmm. you've toured since then, but like, is it ever in the back of your mind at all, like, to when you're doing a move that's more difficult to ever, like, is there ever any hesitation for something like that, or is it just completely out of your mind?
After my injury, I never had any reservations, you know what I'm saying? At the beginning, it was tough to get back.
Yeah.
But once I was back, I was just worried about pushing forward and how was I going to continue to inspire myself to keep it going, but also inspire those who weren't as fortunate as me. You know, some people had the same injury that I had and were not as fortunate. You know what I'm saying? So I felt like I had a tremendous weight on my back that I had to, you know, take across the finish line.
Yeah. Yeah, well, good to have you back, man.
Appreciate it.
Congrats on Everything Is Four. And thanks for chatting with Billboard, as always.
No sweat, man, absolutely. Talk dirty
to me. So thanks again to Jason Derulo for stopping by the Pop Shop Podcast. He also did something very fun with Billboard that I can't wait to share. I don't know when it's...
We can't tell you about it.
Yeah, we can't share, but it was awesome. So you can probably, like, if you've been following Billboard video series, you'll probably know what it is, but even so, it was great.
It means that he's done an interview with me. Not really, no.
No, no, no. Keith, are you ready, my man?
Yes.
For your chart stat of the week. Do, 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 do.
Jason?
What's up?
Did you ever know that you're my hero?
Oh, I did know that.
You're everything I wish I could be. And,
yeah.
And, you know, I could fly higher than an eagle because you are the wind beneath my wings.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thanks, man.
Yeah. So We're speaking of course, the song Wind Beneath My Wings, which this week in 1989 hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart for the divine Miss M, Bette Midler. It is Bette's one and only number one single on the Hot 100, but it is not, of course, her only hit single. She broke through in the early 70s with songs like Do You Want to Dance and Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy, and really made a name for herself as sort of like the all-around entertainer, so much so that she won the 1973 Best New Artist Grammy Award. And, you know, she went on to have an amazing career and continues to do so, of course, in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s as an actress, a singer, a comedian. You know, she's really kind of like a true triple, quadruple threat. But this week in 1989, her song from the movie Beaches, in which she co-starred in with Barbara Hershey, hit number one on the Hot 100, was her first number one hit. She had previously visited the top 10 with songs like, as I said before, Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy, which is such a weird thing to go into the top 10, you know, the cover of Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy.
Seriously.
And she hit number three with The Rose, which was the title track from her Oscar-nominated performance in The Rose, where she played a Janis Joplin-like character. That hit number three in 1980. While she didn't go to number one again after Wind Beneath My Wings, she did hit number two with From a Distance, which the world looks blue and green. Basically, it's the, you know, save the world type anthem, kind of like hitting you over the head with from a distance, everything looks great. But when you get really close, everything's falling apart. Don't you want to help the planet? But anyway, I digress. Bette's on tour right now. Go catch her in her show if you haven't seen her. Jason, I think you're a fan of one of her films, which is called Hocus Pocus. Am I correct in that?
Hell yeah, man. Who isn't?
She does a Hocus Pocus segment in the show.
What? Where really?
Yes, where she actually dresses like her character from Hocus Pocus. She plays a witch in Hocus Pocus. This is an old 90s movie. And every Halloween, you see it trending on Twitter and Tumblr because everyone, like, this millennials love this movie. And in her concert, she dresses up in the crazy wig and the outfit and the teeth and the makeup, and she comes out and sings "I Put a Spell on You," which is her big song from the movie.
I did not know this.
Find it on YouTube. It is such a hoot. But anyway, yes, this week in 1989, Bette Midler hit number one with "Wind Beneath My Wings."
Thank you, Keith, for your chart stat of the week. You know what was funny, speaking of Bette Midler, this wasn't on the podcast, but when B. Miller stopped by a couple weeks ago, she was telling me a story about how someone on social media confused her with Bette Midler.
And was like,
weren't you in Hocus Pocus? But you were so young. That movie came out. And B. Miller was like, no, that's Bette Midler, not B. Miller. Anyway. Keith, that's going to do it for us at the Pop Shop Podcast. Thanks again to those who put in questions. We will be back regular time next Thursday morning with more Hot 100 and chart goodness. Keith, do you have any parting words?
Did you know that Bette Midler and Barry Manilow once played bathhouses in New York? Back in like the late 60s or early 70s, That's how Barry got his start. He accompanied her on piano.
You know,
this is true. Like actual, like gay bathhouses. Like this, like that's why her nickname is Bathhouse Betty. Like Bathhouse Bette, get it? Betty. And truly, he played piano for her in bathhouses where there's like dudes, like gay dudes in like towels, like listening to her sing, and Barry played piano.
This is these are the best parting words.
Sorry, this is really long. I like Bette Midler. I'm sorry. I just think it's hilarious that this existed. Long parting words. Normally I have none, so I'm making up for the fact that I had none for like months.
I know, man. I appreciate that. Well, let's go out on a Bette Midler song. Which song do you want?
Well, why not Wind Beneath My Wings?
Wind Beneath My Wings it is. Thanks for listening and take care.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.